So we probably got to do the thing, Dominique, that we always do when we're about to talk about something not fun before we talk about fun stuff.
Oh, we got to tell them about all the fun stuff that's on the way?
Yes. Yes. The whole, like, please believe me. Please believe us that we are going to talk about fun stuff. Mina's here. Hello, Mina. Mina's always fun.
Hi.
We have a whole menu of fun topics as actual show to get to, but I feel like I'm both interested and I feel obligated in some sense to acknowledge that Deshaun Watson is going to be back in the NFL on Sunday at 1 o'clock p.m. playing against the Houston Texans as if this wasn't on the nose enough. And, you know, I'll just say currently we're up to 29 women, right, at last check, who have publicly shared accounts of sexual assault or harassment. And it just feels extreme, guys. It just feels extreme, which is why it feels like a thing we should address. And you guys have talked about this elsewhere already, Dominique, on your pod. But what should be the way to watch this game, I guess, is the question that I have. Like, how are we supposed to, like, process any of this?
I'll go first, I guess, with information is my answer. I think we were talking about before the show whether or not we would watch it, because let's be clear, there's no football reason to watch this game. Yeah. The right. Texans are right. The worst team in the NFL. Right. The Browns are, you know, fighting for playoff contention. They're kind of on the outside looking in. They're probably going to win this game. We're not going to learn that much, I think, about the team or even Deshaun Watson, I would say, from watching him play such a terrible defense. But we are all kind of curious to hear about, or rather to hear whether the announcers address the reasons for his suspension, where they address the fact that several, I think at least 10 of his accusers are going to be at the game with their lawyer, Tony Busby, and to hear how they talk about it. Because thus far this season, he has not played, but when he has been mentioned in broadcasts, there hasn't been a lot of information. Heck, Dominique and I talked about this on his podcast, which you guys should check out. We feel like there hasn't even been that information mentioned generally on television.
Right.
You know, a lot of details have been left out along the way. So I think my hope generally is just that people take the time to educate themselves on the actual substance of the allegations, the substance from women who did not sue Deshaun Watson, and that that information is actually mentioned, which I am dubious of.
Yeah. How should you watch this game? Like, I don't plan on watching this game, but I think that the important thing is, like, to me at least, we have, you mentioned obligation, Pablo, and that's true. I feel that too, but I also been trying to spin it. Obligations very rarely feel like a good thing, but none of us have been, like, welcoming Deshaun Watson back. All of us have been, like, appreciating that we don't have to talk about it, but I've been trying to spin it in my mind. It's like, we have an opportunity, and, like, there's an opportunity to bring attention to things that we think are important. And it happens more, it feels like it happens more often in sports than it ever did before. And it's part of the job that I like and appreciate, is having that opportunity to speak to a group of people that wouldn't normally seek these things out. So rather than talk about that opportunity, we can use that opportunity. And I think that understanding that women, like, they fall into the class of, technically, I don't know that we call women minorities, but, like, they fall into a class that is definitely subjugated in many ways. And I think that this is evidence of it, how we treat this case and how we treat people who treat women poorly, but have value in society. Like, it happens over and over again. And I like to think that the more that it comes up, the more that we bring attention to it, the more that people like us, men specifically, like, point out the hypocrisies and inconsistencies, the closer we get to something that feels normal and right. So we're not going to have this opportunity very much going forward. Once he plays this one return game, like, I feel like there is not going to be an obligation to bring it up. And NFL very strategically, shrewdly put it on a weekend with a bunch of good games, gave the Cowboys the Sunday night game, put it at 1 o'clock, doubled it up with going back to Houston. So there will be no dodging. Like, it feels like if you didn't bring his name up or bring the reasons up this time, it feels like you're dodging it. I feel like a lot of broadcasts and and shows that talk about football going forward after this week can like credibly dodge talking about it.
Yeah, I guess I just don't want people, I'm one of these people, to look back on this story and feel like they're insane. Like, it's just an extreme story. It's a super extreme story. I just keep, like, that's why I start with the number, right? Like, you know, I'm not here to be on a moral high horse and tell you to stop being a Browns fan or to stop watching football or whatever. None of us are doing that. We will be covering football enthusiastically, collectively, and maybe that's like the unavoidable hypocrisy when you care about something very seriously, but also care about something else, also incredibly seriously. But to me, it's just a matter of flagging this as this was an extreme case that did not get handled with the sensitivity or respect by the part of the Cleveland Browns specifically, as well as the other teams that got into the Derby to sign him and pulled off one of the most cynical transactions that we've ever seen in sports. Because to me, like, the goal, I guess, and we don't have to talk about this, you know, at length beyond this point, I guess, but like, I just don't want to be the bad guy in a documentary, man. And I know that's not the job of like people running sports teams. They're very present focused. They're all in because their jobs and philosophies are that way. But I just don't want to, I just don't want to be humiliated when I think back at how we discussed something that was insane.
Have you guys ever tried to talk about the story with people who aren't in sports, like who don't really care? Because it blows them away.
Yes.
Like I've, you know, that there's, I think the story got to be so big, especially during this summer, that there were, I don't know, non-sports fans were kind of marginally aware of it. You know, it's talked about on CNN. It was the subject of a New York Times Daily episode. And whenever I had, you know, when I would talk about it within the world of sports, I was always so conscious of the fact that there was going to be backlash and hate and that people in our industry were reluctant to talk about it. And then when I would leave our bubble and just literally just give the information to anyone outside, they'd be like, that man got $230 million.
Exactly.
It's like, it blows their minds. And it is such a referendum on how sports completely and sports success and talent completely distort our understanding of what should be a pretty simple, like, this is not complicated. We talk about it like it's, oh, this is tricky and it's nuanced. It's not. It's not. I feel like, to your point, like, it's the kind of thing where you're right. Like, my hope is that in 30 years, it's looked at differently from how it was discussed this summer, how it's probably going to be discussed this year. But, you know, we probably would have said that when Ben Roethlisberger, when the allegations of rape happened with him before I was working, we were all working in sports media, and it feels like actually we haven't progressed that much since then.
Yeah. And the other part is just that, Alabaster, the last thing, it just feels like the sport is less fun by some margin because of this. And maybe that's the most superficial pain point, but that feels like the cost that we have to pay because these are the trade-offs. Like, it just has to feel worse. As much as you can be optimistic about it, it has to feel worse because that's the sport we're watching. That's the culture we live in.
Can I take one more beat before we move on? Because I was, you know, I talked about the information and the allegations. Like, you know, I think I talk about this. Like, what are the things we want to remind people of that were reported that will not be mentioned this weekend on the game? Maybe they'll say the words sexual misconduct, which has kind of become a catch-all for all of this. You know, and I can encourage people to go read the Jenny Ventress article in the New York Times. I'll just... For me, it's the thing I alluded to this, but I just kind of want to reinforce it in Dominique's podcast because it's the thing that I feel like constantly gets lost. Because, you know, you guys read your reply so often when this is brought up and people are looking for reasons to defend him. It's, you know, 24 women, they just want money, whatever. I just want to remind people in her reporting, Jenny Ventress spoke with women who shared similar stories and did not sue Deshaun Watson for money.
Yes.
I feel like that gets lost time after time after time. It's not one woman, it's more than one woman. And I just kind of want to hit that again because I feel like it just gets lost every time I bring it up and I never see it. I just feel like it doesn't get brought up very often.
Yep. Yeah. Alabaster, I think we have hopefully done a decently a decently like informed and good job. Can we get to the fun stuff, please, now?
Absolutely. We'll move on to a juicy potential offseason story. Could you see a world where Tom Brady is a Patriot again next season?
So what am I supposed to do with this story? Right? Because the story originated and it's one of those stories that ends up being like sourced from like a rabbit hole of links, like a Russian nesting doll of like sources where I'm like, what's the source that I actually trust here? I'm not sure what it is. So what do you guys understand about where this all started?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand where it all started. Like, it feels speculative, but also like valid enough that we have to treat it with some respect. It seems like,
yeah,
it seems like it's something. I was going to say it seems possible because it's such a crazy story, but given Tom Brady's given Tom Brady's like behavior in the last several years, it doesn't seem crazy to me. It seems like a nice little storybook ending, and there's a lot of people who are going to lose their jobs or have their plans shifted dramatically so Tom Brady can come back to the Patriots. And it's not just one of those ceremonial come back and retire here situations. But I don't know. Maybe he's learning. At least I've seen so far this year, a lot of the issues with this team are things that, at least from the outside looking in, it didn't seem like were things that Tom Brady had to worry about when Bill Belichick was running the show.
This is believable to me for two reasons. One, Mac Jones is having a bad season. We're taping this part before, sorry to ruin the magic, before Thursday night. So maybe he'll light up the Bills. I don't know. I'll look stupid. But thus far this season, not been great for young Mac, which makes this seem totally plausible just from a purely football perspective. It's also plausible because Brady tried to leave the Bucs. He tried to do it already. Right, and when the initial reports came out about him trying to force his way via like becoming a part owner, but then working his way back onto the roster
that
with Miami, when that story
amazing.
Came out, nobody believed it. It barely got credence. It was all true. It was all true.
It does feel like the number one thing I've learned about Tom Brady over the last like 6 months or a year now
all
is that
it.
Tom Brady's up to stuff. I don't know what that stuff is. I just know he's up to
it. Yes.
I'm like, what is this FTX thing? What is this divorce thing? I'm not gonna indulge the TikToks and the conspiracies. Just know that I've watched them. And I am curious as to what the hell. When he said himself, there's a lot of shit going on. This feels like some of the more plausible shit that could be going on.
Also, reason number three why I believe this story, would you want to stay in Tampa? Have you guys been watching Buccaneers football this year? He's got motive.
Yeah.
He's got a history.
Yeah.
And he's got a destination. I mean, you have all of the pieces in place for this to be true.
And they have cap space, as you can see, which like never has been something that you needed for Tom Brady, honestly. But I guess because some changes in his personal life, maybe he might need an influx of cash. So, or personal and off the field professional life, he might need some cash. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the interesting thing to me about it is what would we think about them next year? Because while he was there, they were always contenders in our mind.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like we got to be like, nah. Because the reason why he left was because they didn't have weapons. They don't got them. They don't got him waiting for him. I guess maybe he can go on some crazy shopping spree, which is something Bill Belichick has never done. But it feels, I guess we shouldn't be doing 2023 season projections, but that's all that really matters to
hypothetical
me.
Hypothetical 2023 projections. I don't know. It just feels like, as much as you're right, like on paper, there are questions. It's also, man, I know what it feels like when he's wearing that uniform. And at no point was I like, this guy has no chance. Of course,
The other teams that are up there, 49ers, Raiders, Titans, are like potential locations. Raiders seems ridiculous to me. while they do have the weapons, that defense is tough. Right. And I guess Josh McDaniels is somebody he likes, but I don't know about that. 49ers seems possible because they have a great defense, all the weapons you would need, a good offensive line. And it seems, unless there's like some headbutting between him and Kyle Shanahan on how the offense is going to work. And the Titans, like, Yeah, I guess
that works. Defense. Good Mike defense, Vrabel. Yeah.
Braves.
I could see that.
Yeah, I'm sure they've had some texts. They've had to have some texts every now and then.
Oh, that's the other thing.
This is about a great
Tom
stat.
He's constantly texting people secretly. Yeah. Good. I mean, so okay, I didn't know. All right, Brady is 18th in QBR, as Mina's alluding to for the podcast audience of this card, between Jimmy Garoppolo and Ryan Tannehill, which is like
Jimmy
a great.
Jimmy Garoppolo's better than Tom Brady. I've often said
that's like a sandwich. He's like sandwiched by mediocrity, but himself is not considered mediocre. Is that what we're doing with this? With this statistic,
it's going to take a lot to wash off all that goodwill, that we have built up because he's Tom Brady.
46, yeah, I mean, man. 40 goddamn.
I got to be honest. I'm empty. Like, I don't got anything else to say about Tom Brady potentially going to the Patriots next year. So can we get our check? Or
when Mina mentioned the Dolphins story, I was like, oh, right. Like, the most insane version of this actually did almost happen. And now this one feels very quaint.
And I was going to say, that was way crazier.
And then it all fell through because of racism. I love it.
If it wasn't for those measly racist kids, he would have gotten away with it.
Wait a minute. And I'm ripping Bomani Jones, the first person to espouse this conspiracy theory. So the Flores suit broke because Bill Belichick accidentally texted Flores, pretending, thinking he was Brian Daboll. And Bo was like, well, what if he wanted to bust up the Miami deal? And 40 chess. What if Bill did that, busting at the Miami deal, knowing that he could eventually get Tom Brady to come home?
Bill Belichick gets so much credit.
A fifth dimension of chess.
Yeah. Let's move on to a quarterback who has a lot less goodwill. Are you starting to think that Kyler Murray is the problem in Arizona?
No, it's Cliff. All right.
Well, the reason we're here, which is funny, Mina, to your point, is that Patrick Peterson, his former teammate, of course, on the Cardinals, now with the Vikings, has a podcast. On the podcast, he began by saying that, of course, Cliff Kingsbury will be blamed for this season. The guy who hired him will, of course, not be fired. And then he was asked by Brian McFadden, his co-host. Oh, we have a clip. Let's actually just show them the clip.
I was waiting. Verbally now, vocally, Kyler Murray is talking about, and I don't like how he's doing that. I think he should keep some things privately, but it tells me he doesn't care about his head coach. And he's putting everything on the head coach, basically saying
Kyler Murray don't care about nobody but Kyler Murray. That's just a matter of the fact.
I got it. So.
I love being with a friend who is talking tremendous amounts of about somebody that I don't know. And all I'm doing is like supportively, also like implicitly, stochastically talking too. Like, yeah, I'm just here to nod. I don't know.
It's a very like in a relationship thing to do where you just got to pile on whoever they talking bad about. Yeah, you know, she ain't never been.
That's why it's good that none of our relationships are. Oh, wait, Dominique has his wife on his podcast sometimes. But I was going to say the things we say about our colleagues to our significant others should not be in podcast form. There is a little bit of irony in them criticizing for Kyler Murray for airing out his grievances with Cliff in a public forum where Patrick Peterson is airing out his grievance with Kyler Murray, who then responded, should I read it?
Yeah.
This isn't true. You on some weird bleep at P2. You got my number. If you really felt like this as a quote, big bro or mentor, you're supposed to call me and tell me, not drag me, so your podcast can grow. Great final line, Kyler. I just want to say, throwing in so your podcast can grow, dagger. Because the second I read that, I was like, he's right. He just did it for his podcast numbers.
I mean, it is how I learned.
It occurred to me until that point.
It's how I learned that Patrick Peterson had a podcast, was this story. So, yeah, mission accomplished.
Facts.
Oh, I didn't learn that. I thought it was Brian McFadden's podcast. Did they share it? It's a tandem pod?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yep. I didn't
All
know
things
that.
Covered.
Well, I with the great integrity, refuse to grow the podcast because, as you can tell, I didn't listen to it other than that clip that we saw. But I'm going to resist the urge to pick a bad guy and good guy in this. And maybe, yes, they are doing it so it can grow. That don't mean it's not true. Patrick Peterson is not a young rookie who fumbles around on the microphone. He knows what's happening. And there's also, like, other speculation. I think Larry Fitzgerald's father was like, yeah, he ain't playing with that dude. Larry Fitzgerald was like effusively praising Colt McCoy. Like, there's a lot out there that suggests that maybe they shouldn't have done it this way, but maybe it's true. But to the specifically to the question, is Kyler Murray the problem in Arizona? I don't know. Yeah, but it doesn't matter because he also has to be the solution. So if he's the problem, who cares? You can't fix that problem. I don't know. We'll see, Kyler. He's talented enough to be an yet.
He is 22nd in QBR. He is 4-8 and not talented enough to be feels like the problem here. Like, this would not be a problem if he was not 22nd in QBR and instead was second or fifth or whatever it takes to get that pass. It's the whole thing about how leadership is great. Like, great motivational speech. Also, if you're not helping us win, we aren't motivated at all.
I'm looking. So Patrick Peters' podcast is charting, I imagine, for the first time ever. All Things Covered with Patrick Peters in is at number 75.
Let's see.
Dominique Foxworth, 67. Wow. New York Times, 49. Wow.
Pablo, ESPN 120. Daily.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
I've been shadow banned.
We all have podcasts.
Yeah,
We are all trying to grow them. Is this how we grow our podcasts? Absolutely. To Kyler's point? And
you know what? It's like, funny.
You got to get spicy.
Let's have a fake beef. Me and you, let's have a fake beef for like several weeks and then just come out like, gotcha, like how rappers do these days.
Nobody's going to believe that.
I was Alabaster. I've been doing my research. I'm looking through Kyler's likes because I'm like trying to figure out like, okay, what's he tacitly sort of boosting here. Five likes in at Sunmin Kimes, just liking the tweet about the Korean flag on the helmet. So your
stop
mom,
it.
Mina.
Stop it! Really? Wait, what?
October 2nd, 2022. Your mom is clearly on Team Kyler. Yeah.
Wait, Kyler's liking my mom's tweet?
No.
I don't know.
I thought you said that your mom liked his tweet. No.
No. Kyler. This is no. Kyler. This is Kyler. Kyler liking. Yeah.
So Mina is hopelessly biased in this conversation. Sorry, right. Patrick. I got your side, buddy. Yeah. It feels very Russell Wilson-esque also. It's like, when you're not good, we're coming for your neck. When you're good, we love it.
No, we're close. We're close, Alabaster, to like, you know, taking a roll call at Kyler Murray's next birthday party. Like, we're at the we need more people phase of who's more popular than who.
And big difference, you know, Russell Wilson's a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, which Kyler Murray played 7 good games in 2020. It's worth noting, Dan Graziano pointed this out on Twitter, that the sooner, if they do not think Kyler Murray is the answer, the sooner they trade him, the better, because his big cap number starts at the start of the league year in 2024. And if they truly don't believe that this guy can be their quarterback, moving on from him is a possibility.
To be clear, I don't want to hear that from Dan Graziano, because Dan Graziano is selfish. I've been working with him for a few years now, and nobody likes Dan Graziano.
He
be out here stealing takes. Dan Graziano listen to you taking a meeting, say it on TV. Dan Graziano will be looking over your shoulder, trying to check out your research. So yeah, Dan, he got some Kyler in him. So I refuse to accept any of his analysis. Because I don't mess with Dan, and a lot of people, I mean, people saying it behind closed doors.
Wow. You know, I'm reading a tweet from Dan Graziano now. ESPN is editorially Wow. This is a jarring escalation.
I don't think Graziano is a good target to promote your podcast. I don't think that's going to get aggregated. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Out of all the mean things I said, you just said the meanest.
Wow. We inadvertently revealed so much in this segment.
Really did.
Including the fact that I'm completely in, me and my fellow Koreans are completely in the tank for Kyler. Yes.
All right, next topic. We think the Bengals are the best team in the AFC if they beat the Chiefs this weekend?
No, is my answer.
Buffalo? Going Buffalo still?
I got to see what Buffalo does, and then I got to see what the Dolphins do. I think if the Dolphins beat the Niners, then they could. It just depends how the games play. Don't give me that look. It depends how the games play out.
I'm surprised.
It's going to be close.
You would, if they, I guess, if they beat the Chiefs, you have to say that they're also better than the Chiefs because, like, their resumes matched up next to each other. The Chiefs have wins that are impressive. They have a loss that, like, feels defensible. Now we're in college football land. I like this. This is where we are.
We're in college football land. You're right. We're like quality of victory.
They had a tough loss against the Bills when they were playing well. They've beaten Tennessee. They've beaten the Chargers twice. Like, if you look at what the Bengals have done, it's not nearly as impressive. This will be their first Power 5 big conference win if they beat the Chiefs right now. Not to take anything away from them. I think they are a good team. I think they can make a playoff run. I think they're probably going to come back and get the Ravens. However, this will have to be the start of it. Building up to this, they was beating up on some chumps.
Fellow members of the NFL playoff committee, what if the Bengals, though, were to just barely beat the Chiefs? Let's say Patrick Mahomes throws a bunch of boneheaded interceptions uncharacteristically. Meanwhile, the Dolphins womp the Niners. Oh, yeah. Would you still feel that way?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Okay.
The Dolphins, if they beat the Niners in San Francisco without their all-pro level tackle, they might jump the Chiefs this week. Because, like,
that's what I mean, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying jump.
No. I'm saying if they get a big win over the Niners.
Yeah. I think San Francisco, I mean, Miami and San Francisco have a lot to gain this week. This is feels like a conference championship game.
It does. It's funny, though. I mean, look, so much of the fun of, like, the never-ending argument of football is that we don't actually have, like, the ability to compare like to like. All of these schedules are different from each other. This is the college football problem in a nutshell, too. If you're the Bengals and you beat the Chiefs, it's like, what the else are we supposed to do? What the else are we supposed to do? We did it last year. The
you sound like a Bengals
game.
Fan.
I'm just imagining now, like, seriously, what else is Cincinnati supposed to do?
Yeah.
It
would be a substantial win, too, because the Chiefs are pretty healthy, you know, for the most part. So it would be a quality win.
For Chief fans to be real, or excuse me, Bengal fans to be really upset because all people who know and care and talk about football said about them last year was how fluky their run was and how they're not that good. And then if they come out this year, have some ups and downs, injuries and whatnot, and still knock off the Chiefs, and we're like, you know what? You're not the best. You're still mediocre. Like, yeah, if I'm a Bengals fan, I'm pretty upset.
Let me spin this back to the world of just actual football rather than perception speculation. Do you think they can beat the Chiefs, Dominique?
Yeah, I do think they can beat the Chiefs. The weakest point of their defense is probably the corners, which, like, that's a issue for most teams in football because corners really hard to play. Losing Awuzie hurts, but, I mean, they have a strong defensive line. And they have a scheme, or at least a defensive coordinator with that makes adjustments and has a scheme that seems to give Patrick Mahomes trouble. The other side of the ball is not as smart, but they're very talented. And so they won't have Chase, which matters.
Well, he might be back in this game.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you guys, that was a lot of mumbling and excitement. Chase is coming.
Just trying to save you from
the
podcast. Literally,
it was on the card.
Yeah, it was on the card, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You guys are being too literal.
Really hard to play quarterback.
You're being too literal. I just meant you won't have full strength, Chase. Is all I'm saying, clearly. Jerks. It's like
the quality of Chase.
It'll be a guy. Yeah, it'll be a guy who's Chase on the back of his jersey, but he won't be at his peak. But yeah, the point is they have the ability to beat them, and we saw it last year. But I guess it also kind of feels like Patrick Mahomes beat himself.
I think he cares a lot about this game.
Has to.
I mean, he has to. He was humiliated last year. It was a total meltdown. And you know, from what I know about Patrick Mahomes, is like he is motivated by these types of things and by legacy and redemption. And I gotta think we're gonna see the best of him in this one. For me, with Cincinnati, like their best chance of pulling this off is a high scoring game, which I think is plausible to Dominique's point. But, you know, especially if Steve Spagnuolo goes full Spagnuolo, I was talking about this on NFL. You know how, like, they have get backs You know, yep. Like Sean McVay has the guy who like keeps him going on the sideline. I want to be there when it's third and long. CeCe Spagnuolo is looking at his car and he's thinking, all out blitz, baby.
Yeah,
and I
want
to rip it. I want to rip it out of his hands and grab him by the shoulders and just say, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. You don't have to do it. You don't need to do it against this team, because the Bengals offense has been up and down this year, but they have killed man coverage. Now they have Ja'Marr Chase back. There's no reason to give those guys one-on-ones. You don't have to do it. And it'll be so frustrating to me if he gives in to his Spagnuolo impulses, because he doesn't have to.
I do like the visual image of Mina trying to, like, you know how some parents have their kids on like a leash? Just like Mina trying to pull Steve Spagnuolo around like a sideline.
Do kids still do that? Do parents still do that with the leashes?
I hope not.
I'm thinking about it.
People would, the parents would do that when they had multiple children when I was a kid. Like they would have
normalized child leashes.
I had this morning I was supposed to be doing some stuff, and then I got a call to come pick up one of my kids from school, and so I was in a football mindset thinking about defensive coordinators when I got the call. So then it hit me that parenting is like being a defensive coordinator, and in my house there's a Justin Jefferson. And we don't got no matchups for him. And we be game planning for his ass all the time. Every night, we put in hours of game planning. And then you know what? We show up and he rips our game plan to smithereens.
He lines up all over the field. No matter where you put him. X, Y, doesn't matter.
We don't got a matchup, man.
I'm Bill Belichick. And in my house, I'm facing Josh Allen on every down. Because it doesn't matter what I put up. It doesn't matter if there's a door. This dog, who right now is currently shaking the computer, is going to come barreling through and tackle me at any moment. Sorry about the shaking, by the way.
I think Violet is like current Russell Wilson, just no trouble at all. You just come out there with your defense and it's like no issues. You just, it's all easy.
Yeah, but you can tell that she's like, she's a diva. Yeah, she's a diva.
She's a diva. Has she had any birthday parties?
Oh man. God, not yet. But she is really, into Christmas right now. And
of course she is.
Yeah.
I mean, like an idiot. She thinks Santa's real, guys. What a dumbass.
Do you think Russell Wilson thinks Santa's real?
Alabaster, we need you. Save us.
I'm glad Russell Wilson jokes are funny again. Okay, I'm glad we're back.
No, we're not doing that.
Monster.
This is a pro Russell Wilson podcast.
Yes. Yeah, we care a lot. Let's move on to the next one. Which team do you think has a better chance of winning the Super Bowl, the Dolphins or the 49ers? They play this
week. Ooh, so this game I'm like legitimately excited for.
Great game.
Right? Like as good a game it feels like on paper as we've gotten the opportunity to watch this season. I mean, the case for the Dolphins rests on what? Because to me, the answer is the Niners. But I'm curious.
The Dolphins' offense at this point has been not, I mean, I think historically good, but the case against them is that they haven't played a team like the Niners. They played the Bills, but the Bills were really injured. They played a bunch of soft defenses as of late. Like, we are going to learn a lot about this team this weekend.
And the other case against the Dolphins is that they're in the AFC. And there are some scary teams over there, even if one of them isn't playing all that well right now. And while they've started to run the ball better recently, it's also like you're from Miami. You're going to have to go to a lot of cold weather cities to get to the Super Bowl, where at least people believe that you can air it out. I don't know. Tyreek Hill in Kansas City might argue differently, but you can't air it out to win. The other side is like, we've seen Jimmy do it before, even though he's never done it, but they have a really great defense and even more talented skill players than they had in the past to carry Jim G to the big game.
Jim G, but who has not thrown a pick in four games, I believe, right? Just to add that context.
Mm, jinx him, yeah. The Niners are the more complete team, but I do think that, well, you could say that, you know, they haven't faced like an offense like, or not success. They, you know, obviously struggled against Kansas City. I think that I would have been less confident about the Dolphins before because their defense was like really bad, but they've gotten better over the last few weeks. Bradley Chubb's arrival has helped that four-man rush, which is really important against Miami. But it's the other side of the ball that I want to watch in this one. Like, I mean, so the Dolphins offense is like so fascinating because it's just such an unprecedented combination of speed. And really, they measure in those middle of the field throws. You know, there's all off of play action. There's all this motion. The linebackers never know what's going on. In this particular game, they are going against the best cover linebacker in football, in Fred Warner, a linebacker who I think is probably also has the best eyes of any. Like he's so rarely fooled. And I think if you had to pick a perfect, I wouldn't say a perfect defense to play this team because I don't think they have. Like Tavarius Ward has helped. They're not like as good at cornerback, but just in terms of like taking away the middle of the field, it's such a new, like this is such a good challenge for this Dolphins offense. And I'm really curious to see how they respond, especially without Teron Armstead against Nick Bosa, which is probably going to be a huge problem for them.
Yeah. I mean, Armstead isn't playing. I know I was wrong about Chase earlier, but I think that Armstead,
yeah.
Oh, I thought you said we got Armstead versus Bosa in this game.
Oh, no, Armstead. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So the I looked at Jimmy G's playoff numbers because that's what it comes down to, is like, can Jimmy G survive in the playoffs? They're not good, which I didn't expect them to be good. But what really surprised me is he don't got a good game. And so if we're coming down to, if we all agree that at some point your quarterback's going to have to step up and make some big plays for you, like Tua has success in big college games. He hasn't played in any big NFL games, but also Tua has the optimism that comes with hope, is we haven't seen him. Like, I mean, yeah, it's like,
you're saying that you're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo's eyes. And by the way, many have said that he has the best eyes in football, actually. But you're saying that you're looking into his eyes and you're seeing Jeff Saturday also up there, metal stand. You're seeing somebody who has been deadened by playoff losses.
Randall Cobb.
Jair Alexander.
Have you looked at Treylon Burks, though?
Oh, yeah.
Alabaster. Throw those up. Keep talking, Pablo. Throw those up. Yeah.
He's super hot. Yeah.
It's, we're talking about eyes.
Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with a good deep brown? The three of us, it's just the self-hate is too strong right now. The self-hate is too strong. Nothing's wrong with a deep brown. Well, I forgot what we were talking about. something football, Super Bowl. Oh, I was saying Jimmy G struggles in the playoffs.
That's
not novel. You guys know that, but whatever.
There's Treylon Burke. Yeah, Treylon Burke.
Oh, those are strong eyebrows. That's an underappreciated point of eyes is the importance of the eyebrows and eyelashes. Jeff Saturday, the eyelashes really, really strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Yeah, I think we finished that one, Alabaster. Once we
Who are we picking in this one? Because I've actually gone back and forth.
I'm taking the Niners. I'm taking the Niners. That defense, the defense has a record. The Dolphins, I love the story. I love the offense, but I don't trust them.
No yet. Armstead. I think I would take the Dolphins if Armstead, and I really think it because they really, last Houston, even when Armstead went out, you saw some of the struggles against pressure there. So I'm pretty concerned about how that offensive line is going to hold up against what is arguably the best four-man rush in the NFL.
Let's thread the coward's needle. No, I agree with you, but I don't think that McDaniel is dumb. Like, he's not going to do straight dropbacks.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, I assume, try to find ways to establish some running attack to slow down the rush and do bootlegs and do quicker things. Can this offense be as effective that way is a big question. They're going to have to do something a little bit different, which feels uncomfortable. And we're not even talking about their defense versus the 49ers offense, which I don't know what to expect. They could do what they did against Arizona, or they could do what they did against the Saints. But I know they pose a lot of matchup problems over there. So
they've got some injuries too. Can I tell you guys a crazy stat I found while I was doing game prep for this one? Mm-hmm. Tua and Jimmy G, Dolphins fans do not like it when you compare them, have the exact same number of throws outside the numbers this year. Exactly the same. They are both tied for 25th in the NFL. They are like total photo negatives. Yeah. I mean, different style. These Dolphins are very different. The way they get, Niners get yards after catch. The Dolphins don't. The Dolphins go deeper. The Niners don't. They both measure in middle of the field, but they are identical in terms of attempts throwing outside the numbers.
I don't think anyone has ever gesticulated as excitedly about a completely random and coincidental statistic.
It's not coincidental. That's the point. That's the point. It's not coincidental.
It's called a coincidence, Mina. That's all that is. You just got all worked up over a coinky dink.
It's not a coinky dink.
Santa isn't real.
Yes, they like to attack the middle of the field. Both the fact that they have the exact same number of throws outside the numbers is absolutely a coinky dink.
Thank you. Coinky dink. Stamp that. Stamp that all over the screen. Coinky dink.
Okay. Maybe. Let's move on to a couple if then.
He's so sick of you.
A couple if thens. If Mike White beats the locker Vikings room, on the road,
Dominique lost the locker room. Blank.
Respect
I highlighted it when I found it.
Oh, they
wrote it down.
If Mike White beats the Vikings on the road, then I don't know. I guess we have to respect the Jets as like a real AFC contender. No, because we don't think the Vikings are.
This is way more going to be about the Vikings if this happens in terms
If Mike White beats the Vikings on the road, then it's still not going to be as fun as the game Mike White won last week. They were chanting his goddamn name. Like, that was the emotional peak. This is understandably going to be a stamped, like, victory over a team with at least a good record to restrain myself on the praise for the Vikings.
I need to
That was the best it's going to get, man.
I have another stat, but I don't know if I want to bring it up because you guys don't appreciate my stats on this show. Some might say it's very pertinent and could largely determine the success of this game.
Let's
want to hear it.
Let's hear your coinky dink. Give us another winky.
Database.
Vikings defense, largely because the linebackers worst in the NFL against play action. Mike White, 41% of his attempts on play action last week. We know that's what they want to do. I feel like Vikings won't be able to stop them.
You want to grade the stat, Pablo? A through F?
Yeah, like a B. It's a flat B.
Yeah.
Although she gets points for saying 41 and not like around 40, because this is the mark of somebody who has done
41.4% actually.
Oh, there it is. See, there it is. Yeah.
Almost perfect.
Yeah.
Vikings defense is not good, is my point. They're not a good defense. They have two good pass rushers, but for the most part, you can exploit them. I don't think Mike White is like, there's going to be a big Mike White come down game. It is inevitable. We saw it last year, but I actually don't think it's going to be this one. That was my point.
The come down, the whole like, oh no, the dopamine has run out. And now I'm just like sitting sad in my couch. Like, yeah, the come down from Jesus Christ. Oh, last season. 405, three touchdowns, 34-31 win over the Bengals, and then the next two starts. Four picks, one touchdown. Outscored 94.
Yeah, that's Bills next week feels like the one.
I mean, I guess the real question is, are the Jets going to be able to contain Justin Jefferson and keep the score low enough that Mike White is not going to be asked to do much more than the play action and like just be a little better than Zach Wilson? If they can't keep the score down, then he's going to have to be a lot better than Zach Wilson. Then they don't stand a chance. So I think this question is like the opposite of the game we did before, where we need to really, the thing that we're looking forward to is Sauce and the Jets against Justin Jefferson. And the Vikings.
One last question. Do you think, is Mike White always going to be Mike White, or do you think people ever will, like, you know, he's one of those names where you always have to say the full name for the entire course of his career?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have, neither name is distinctive, and they also sound good together. So, like, I feel like, and they're short, and it's like they're both short. We can't call him Mike. Like, it's like 35 Mikes in football that it could be. We can't call him White. Because I mean, that's reserved for
culture.
Oh man, I was gonna go for it. I'm glad you cut me off right there, Pablo, because the joke I was going for was definitely gonna get edited out. But we can't call him that either. Cause like Patrick Mahomes, name another Mahomes other than his daddy. Like, it works. Mike White is always gonna be Mike White or White Mike.
I like White Mike.
I like how you picked the example of the one guy whose dad we know has the exact same name to make that point. Want to take that one back?
Justin Herbert.
There you go.
Herbert.
I caught it though beforehand, you know, so it's good. Like Burrow, Herbert, you know,
right?
Tagovailoa, Tua. Like, these are all names that like are distinct. Mike White can never succeed because His name's not distinct.
Like Lamar Jackson, people call him Lamar. Tua, because you picked, it's interesting.
It's not.
Yeah.
Super creative name and Josh Allen. I appreciate you.
I'm gonna use that stat on NFL Live tomorrow about the play action, and the crowd's gonna go wild.
You're an outstanding teammate, by the way, because that wasn't interesting, but I appreciate you saying it.
The attempt to sell.
I, on the other hand, bad teammate, because that coincidence stat.
You guys ready for this last one?
I still think it's interesting.
We have a clip for this last one, but if Matt Nagy is actually responsible for this Chiefs juggernaut drafting Patrick Mahomes, then blank.
We got to watch this clip.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The first day that I met Coach Reed was at the facility. We had like the meetings, like the top 30 visits. So I was in there for like 5 hours. He's just going through plays. And I'm going to give you all the inside scoop. Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator then, he really liked me. So he gave me the plays they were going to go over the night before. So Coach Reed's finding out here live on New Heights podcast.
Oh my gosh. Matt Nagy, how could you?
Let's go.
I mean, I believe this is true. Why would Mahomes make this up?
Yeah.
It feels like if Matt Nagy is actually responsible for the Chiefs drafting Patrick Mahomes, then like he's like a character in Rogue One, where it's like, no, Matt Nagy got the plans. He delivered the plans that resulted in the greatest, most cosmic victory for this organization. Spoiler alert.
You do remember the beginning of the podcast when Dominique said he didn't know who Emperor Palpatine was, right? Oh, yeah. You think a Rogue One reference is going to hit?
Yeah. See, that's the difference between me and you, Pablo, is I do the show for you guys. You're doing the show for somebody else out there that's watching Star Wars. That ain't me.
Great reference.
I just want to make you laugh. So to be clear, just so you know, Matt Nagy gives the plays to all the quarterbacks that come in early. He's trying to make friends. That's all. Patrick Mahomes, you ain't special. Matt Nagy, he does that with the DBs too. He sneaks in, like, hey, these are the coverages we're going to go over tomorrow. He sneaks into their hotel room and properly preps them for the next day. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess Matt Nagy deserves all the Super Bowl rings that Patrick Mahomes is going to win going forward.
I like that as a move, though. Yeah, I like how Dominique just ingratiating himself with potential future
employees. Ingratiate yourself just
employees.
In case. Yes, just in case one of those players ends up being a Hall of Fame caliber player, and then they can look back and say, wouldn't be here without Nagy, you know? God.
Where is Matt Nagy now?
Kansas City.
Back in town. Huh. Yeah. Huh. Nice. Huh. Where are you?
Emotional?
Yeah, you do look like you're at a commercial. Nice tie.
Right over the skating.
Working some different dress codes at the moment.
Yeah.
Wow. I gotta go feed Josh Allen.
Good luck. Hopefully he doesn't turn over the bowl.